Welcome to the Bank of Life podcast. I'm your host, James Nethery. I'm excited about today's show, even though it's not a long form episode. What we've done, we've gone back and taken clips from previously released episodes on particular topics and points. I think they're powerful. I think they're worth listening to. So thank you for listening and hope you enjoy.
What have I heard you say at least 1,000 times?
I don't know, but I hope it's good.
When you've got the capital, opportunity will find you.
They will. They'll track you down.
Man, that's
man, I shouldn't have had these guys turn the recording off. I mean, I didn't want to get your personal stuff recorded, but this stuff here is gold, you know?
Yeah, and it works in anyone's life that will allow it to happen. It's just so powerful. So powerful.
Yeah. So see, we get hung up on life insurance. We get hung up on the internal rate of return and comparing one illustration to another illustration without knowing, you know, and it's hard. The consumer can't know the details behind these policies, the mechanics of the policies, what can be done, what can't be done, you know, and then you have human action. You know, what you do with your policy is going to be different than what I do with my policies, and it's going to affect your policy differently than I'm going to affect my policy. At the end of the day, the banking is eternal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And Nelson used to say that, and I didn't agree with him for a long time. You know, I didn't agree that it was eternal.
It is.
There is eternal
ways about it. And here's another thing I've heard you say before. What you think is the first occupation is not true, because somebody had to finance that activity. So banking is the first entity. And always,
isn't that a fact? Have you ever heard that before?
No, not till you said it.
But yeah, it's obvious once you hear it, right? Well, of course.
Here's the other thing. I have heard that banks in general earn somewhere between 400 and 1,300% interest on all their activity.
Somebody's just putting a number on there, because yeah, that ain't right. Let me ask you, look, I'm a bank, and I'm talking about central banks, right? Central banking,
yeah,
right? But it really trickles down to the local bank. If you deposit into, I'm the banker, I own the bank. If you deposit $100,000 into my bank, what is my limitation to leverage?
10 times you can loan out.
No. You go to the Federal Reserve, yeah. Fred, the Federal Reserve economic data. Mm-hmm. There is no reserve requirement today in the United States banking system. Okay? None. Yeah. Zero.
But zero. If a bank gets $1 million from the Federal Reserve to implement into the marketplace,
mm-hmm,
they can 10 times that legally.
They can 100 times that. I'm telling you, there's no 10% legal reserve requirement.
The rule was okay.
Huh. No, that rule moves, and we always have. It was 10% for a long time. Actually, I'm telling you, it's zero. I've got the documents. It's zero. So look, if you put $100,000 in my bank, mm-hmm, and there is no reserve requirement, mm-hmm, none. But let's just say it's 10 times, so I can lend out $900,000. I'm limiting it to 10, mm-hmm, 10 times, right? And I pay you 4%. On your 100 grand, what am I charging on the 900?
Oh, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Right.
Depending on the credit worthiness and what they're buying.
Okay. So we're putting, that's fine with me. We can average it out at 10. So we say that's a 10% rate of return.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's infinity. The number didn't exist until you put your 100 in. I manufactured the 900 out of thin air. It's infinity. The return is infinity, because
yes,
there was no cost to me.
This is why Nelson stressed those people are actually evil, because they're borrowing money, lending money that doesn't exist.
That's evil. And that's why he said, if you look at their ancestry, you'll find that they have canine ancestry. I mean, I know they probably took that out of the 10-hour video. What we have today actually is the Babylonian banking system. That's the origins of our banking system, is in Babylon. to be able to spot the noise, it would help with the foundational works that I mentioned earlier. Nelson Nash discovered this idea. Nothing's changed in the life insurance industry that's made his concept any better. Nothing's changed. There's no guru out there that says or that can both feet on the ground and say, oh, yeah, we've made it better. No. You should go to the foundational works, and you understand that. And it's not like this is overly complicated or esoteric, right? Now, it's counterintuitive. There's no question. It's the exact opposite of what you're told to do with your money, because nowhere in personal finance, retirement planning, all of the designations, CFA, CHFC, the CPA, nowhere in conventional financial, personal planning, personal finance, does anyone ever talk about controlling the banking function. Nowhere. So go to the source. If you have a decent foundation in the source, you'll be able to spot the noise that you might want to avoid, to have a solid understanding of Nelson's work. And then you can confidently identify the noise and why it's noise and sidestep it. So, and I really just want to be encouraging, because it is springtime. The weather's good. The grass is green. I'm Irish. I like green. Yes, I know. I'm Scott Irish. So, that just means that I have a long memory and can hold a grudge, is what I'm told. But it's beautiful. It's time of renewing and building and planting, and all of that is work. All of this vetting, all of this planting is work. Right. And I know I had conversations with Nelson and relating it to farming. It's like the work that I and many others do, promoting the idea that you can become your own banker is akin to farming. You got to chisel soil. You got to prepare the soil to accept the seed so you can have proper germination. And that's all in the springtime, right? The beginning of the planting season. Well, then along comes the summer, the weeds show up, the birds come up, the cares of this world, the noise, all of that knock you off track if you're not paying attention, right? And I'm just saying it takes work too, to work through the summertime, get the weeds out, get the noise out, and stay on track. But then right after all that comes harvest, right? Oh, and then the wintertime, time for reflection. How can you do better? All that kind of has its basis in Jim Rohn, The Seasons of Life, whom I've talked about many times. And I think he's, worth listening to.
But then the ownership, though, James, is if you know how the importance of all those seats in that equation. Like, you owe it to yourself to have some really good discussions about how to use that capital. What is important to me and my family? Where are we trying to go as a family unit, not just self? Because I think about mom and sister and my nieces and stuff like that as well. What I try and anticipate, what are things that they may need and what's important to us? And then be willing to, discard things that are not important. And have those really healthy discussions, because those things are going to need to be financed. Well, now the next question is, well, what is that thing that needs to be financed? Is it a want? Is it a need? Is it a, I hope this works out, or, whatever. And you can have those awesome discussions too. Another benefit that I've learned, more so that, an unintended value of this process is knowing that I have capital that's always growing, that it's safe, it's liquid, and it's growing at a compounded conservative rate by volume, which is awesome, that it buys me time to figure out what is it that's important to me, whether it is an investment or whether it is a vehicle or a vacation, whatever those things are. But while I'm deciding, or maybe just sitting on the sideline, I've given the horse a job, right? It's out there working. Cause I remember that's a phrase that when I was in the office last time you said it, and it's just hugely powerful in so many ways, is your money is like a horse. You got to give it a job or it'll wander off.
Right.
Right. And so the horse is over there working. I've given it jobs. So now I can either pause and do nothing. Maybe in today's financial climate, I'm a big believer in pause, you know, and it's okay to be on the sidelines.
When I was younger, you know, I didn't even discover the infinite banking concept until I was about 40, 41, 42. Mm-hmm. Right. So very much an optimistic, very much a hard worker, still am. But I'm telling you, the first four or five policies I bought, your mother, like, she literally got angry, you know, after the fourth or fifth one. I mean, literally, she's like, where are we going to get the money to even pay the premium? Not even talking about loan repayments, right? And I'm like, I don't know. And, you know, so very optimistic,
yeah,
hard worker, but not over. Well, I overextended myself a couple of times, mm-hmm. no question. But it was not like I'm overextending myself at the bank and the banker shows up and starts recalling, repossessing assets. Ooh. Been there. Let me tell you what, too. If you're in business, or it doesn't even, you don't even have to be in business, right? As an individual, if you just hear me out. If you've had, if you've been over leveraged, maybe it was caused by something outside of your control, wasn't over leveraged in the beginning, but then became over leveraged. And the bankers start showing up and swapping assets, or they call notes, right? Change the rules of the game, or change the, in the middle of your, we lay out the expectations and they change in the middle of the deal. Whenever you do that, go through that a time or two, this idea of controlling the banking function will scream at you and it will resonate with you. And it's life changing. And I bring that up because, you know, I've been on Skid Row a couple of times in my life. And I say Skid Row, I mean, it's been pretty damn close to Skid Row. And it's in my younger years and all that. But these bankers are not your friends, you know, and they're just not your friends. And they change. You know, your banker could get fired tomorrow, you know, and then the whole new loan committee could turn over, and hell, the bank could change ownership. How many times has your bank changed ownerships? How many times have you had a banker retire on you and the new guy shows up and y'all are not buddies? I mean, so,
yeah,
you know, life does happen is my whole point there. Barry, you know, do you get pushback on your books, you know, from financial professionals, or just, you know, maybe somebody's got large holdings in the stock market and they're in love with the stock market, you know, and do you get pushback from your document
all the time,
your documentation?
Yeah. All the time. I give people these facts and they don't believe me.
Right, but they won't go vet them. They won't go check.
No. It's like I had an engineer one time, very sophisticated engineer. He actually designed like turbine blades for large jumbo jets and things like that. Very, very smart guy. And he had all of his money with one of the larger Wall Street banks. Okay. And I showed him where this large Wall Street bank put their own money. And I showed this gentleman how this very famous Wall Street bank, which was bailed out by you and I, the taxpayer, in 2008, had none of its money, not one penny in equities in the stock market. And the engineer says, he said, "How? Why didn't anyone tell me? And how? Why, you know, he's crazy." People get really angry and they frustrated. And I can't blame them because, you know, it's this is very common.
Was he motivated? You found
the same thing, James? What?
Was he motivated?
No, he got pissed off. Yeah. And I think he ended up buying a bunch of annuities from his old other advisor at this well-known investment bank, who bankrupted a number of large companies.
Yeah. No, I don't really get, I mean, I get pushback from, you know, agents, other like life insurance agents or advisors, but not a whole lot. You know, and the pushback that I get is, you know, I'm too angry, or, you know, I'm mean spirited or whatever. And which is, you know, ludicrous. If you know me, I'm a big old soft teddy bear. I've got nothing but love. And then as we were, you know, talking, you know, it kind of resonated with me that all the financial gurus were telling you to do something different, or telling you that you had made a tragic mistake and you should replace it. And so then, and I remember that you just didn't feel good about your decision, you know, after meeting with them. And, you know, and I think that's just an issue in the industry that's really not going to change. I see it all the time. But when I seen you, when you shared your illustration with me, whether it was in force or whatever it was, I thought it was a fabulous policy. And we had that conversation where the 10-year term rider was expiring. You wanted to expand your system. You intuitively knew that you wanted to buy another policy, not necessarily replace the one you had, right?
Yep.
And which I completely agreed with, and still do agree with it. And it's not that just because I agree with it, it's right or you should do it. I'm just, we had a meeting of the minds and went through it kind of analytically, you know, with numbers. Let's look at what you really have. Let's look at what you're trying to do. And then what can you do, right? Mm-hmm. And
let me add, when we had that meeting, you were upfront and honest and said, I didn't need a new policy. I could expand my current policy because I had enough room in it to put more PUAs. But I'm thinking long term, and I don't want to have to go through another. You know, when I have the ability to get that new policy, go through another. You know, testing of the blood and all that kind of stuff. And I wanted to convert now so I can have that second system to build the build.
Right. And I think that's the best decision to convert the term. But that existing policy, even without the term, you can still, you know, you can pay substantial premium. And so now you're in a situation that you can do whatever you want. You can fund them both. You can fund one or the other.
Exactly.
And it is a correct expansion. And I must say, too, that this is life insurance. We have to go through underwriting. You know, nobody wants to take an exam and give blood and disclose your height and weight and your personal habit. I get all that. And if I can say, you were highly rated. You're a very healthy individual.
Yes. Yep.
When you purchase that policy, right? So you had a very high rating, which a rating is not the end of the world, right? Whether you have a substandard rating, a standard rating, or a preferred rating. However, 10 years later, you might not have been able to achieve that original rating.
That's right. Yep. Yep.
And I mean, I'm not an underwriter, but I think you're completely insurable. But the point that I want to make is that we're never any younger or healthier than we are right now. So this idea that I'll, you know, buy policies later, you know, if everything goes well, that's absolutely possible. But not everything goes well all the time. And sometimes we become uninsurable. And sometimes when we become uninsurable, it's immediately. You know, it's immediate, and you don't have the opportunity to prevent it or change it. Anyway, okay. So
and to the other thing too is that I definitely needed of more life insurance too.
You were underinsured, like most of us.
I was underinsured, so I needed that second policy, and then now there's a term rider on that. So in 7 to 10 years, I can convert that if I want a third policy. So I kind of knew all along that that's what I should be doing.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.